Don't miss an episode. Subscribe to this show on whatever podcast player you prefer, and follow me on Facebook and Instagram. Hey, it's Lindsay, and I want to pop in here because I know how overwhelming it can be to get started building an online business. I've even spoken with people who've paid thousands of dollars for help from people who are truly experts in this, and they're still feeling confused about what direction is right for them, or if their idea is even a good one. Listen, you don't have to guess or pray or hope or any of that. There is a way to test the market to ensure your idea is a good one so you can launch with confidence. And that's exactly what I show you in this simple 35-minute video training. I keep it simple because I know you already have so much swirling around in your brain. I'm not here to add more confusion because what you need right now is clarity. And that's what's in store for you in the short training called How to Tell If Your Idea Will Be Profitable. Access the video right now by texting the word FREEDOM to 55444. Stop guessing and start taking strategic action. Text FREEDOM to 55444. All right, back to the show. Okay, folks, and welcome back to the Freedom Entrepreneur Podcast. I'm your host, Lindsay Sutherland, and excited today for this really fun episode, something that God sparked an idea, and I'm excited to bring it to you today, and I'm really grateful for our guests for their willingness to participate. We're doing a debate-style conversation talking about collaboration versus competition and which is a more effective leadership stance to have in your business. I know this is an interesting conversation because oftentimes we see everybody touting like collaboration and cohesive environments, but yet you go to work and what happens? It's really competitive. It feels very competitive. So where's the truth? If collaboration is typically more powerful, then why aren't more businesses embracing it? And maybe we just need to have a conversation about that. So that's what we're doing. And I want to introduce our guest. We have Chelsea Rosner, who is the CEO of Be Your Own Black Sheep Coaching. She's fantastic, by the way. We've gotten to know each other a little bit here. And also Alan, who's an amazing host of a podcast, Next Level Universe, and the CEO of Next Level University, which, by the way, guys, just a quick plug. We recently had Is Kevin your co-partner?
Yes. He is my business partner. Yes.
Awesome. Partner. Okay. So Kevin was on the show too. So that's another really amazing episode to go check out as well. So let's dig in. I want to start by just inviting each of you to kind of tell us a little bit about yourself. Why did you choose this perspective? And, you know, what about your life has led you to this point where you feel like, yeah, I'm the right person to talk about it. So we'll start off with Chelsea.
Yeah. Thank you so much. So, I mean, realistically, my background is I'm a certified master life coach, a business strategist, and because of everything that Be Your Own Black Sheep stands for, what I really do is flip the way that people think about how, like, you and your business actually fit together. So going through that and doing that day in and day out with, you know, thousands of people over the years, it's really about embracing that your identity and the inherent gifts that you bring to the table aren't just your marketing angle, they're actually kind of your only angle. And so when you do that right, when you show up right, like your ambition not only gets a chance to shine, but your like ability to deal with like the non-negotiables and expectations and find that clarity sweet spot where everything grows, you actually just make sense for who you are and not just the thing that your business is trying to sell. And so I decided to throw my hat, you know, in the ring for talking about the competition side of things, because I've spent years watching people chase other people's collaborative formulas, force things that don't fit for them, and all in the name of growth, when really they're just kind of blending themselves or, you know, holding themselves back just to fit into the noise that becomes growing a business. And so my work is really built around this core principle that chaos turns into clarity and success when you stop outsourcing your own identity. And when you can start playing with like internal precision, you actually get ahead further and faster than the people around you who are still doing the same thing. So let's be very honest. I'm not anti-collaboration, right? Okay. I just believe that competition comes first, because when it's done right, it doesn't build a dependency or like watered down concepts for you, but rather it grows this longevity that actually sharpens the whole system further down the road. So competition, when you have that clarity, it doesn't have to be this, I have to win, so that means you have to lose. But it's really, if I know my edge, I have to live that unapologetically so that I bring more to the table whenever it is that we do build something together.
Powerful. All right, Alan.
Okay, so the first thing I'm going to say is thank you. Thank you for having us. Thank you for this debate because, and again, I don't know if I even call it a debate, a discord, a healthy discussion where we get both sides of the coin because the truth is obviously in the middle. So I want to be very clear up front. I am not anti-competition. I'm extremely competitive to a ex insane degree. However, what I would start out with is, and I'll talk about my background a little bit. Tough upbringing. Dad died when I was very young, stepfather from 3 to 14. He left my family, dealt with a lot of abandonment early on, and I became this sort of super achiever, prove myself guy. That's why I have all my awards in the background. And I realized at 26 years old, I got in a car accident, and my birth father died in a car when he was 28. So when I was 26, I got in a head-on collision, my fault. And that was the second chance my dad never got moment. I call it my quarter life crisis. At that point, I was a global top 1% earner, did the traditional path. I did kindergarten, preschool, kindergarten, elementary school, middle school, high school, college, corporate. I did the whole quote unquote American dream and I crushed it. Straight A's in high school, got all the scholarships and financial aid I could. I went to one of the best engineering schools in the world. It's called WPI, it's like a mini MIT in Massachusetts. And I got my computer engineering degree, got my master's in business, and then I was off to the races at a bunch of different tech companies, and I rose very quickly. In my early 20s, I made almost $200,000 a year, and I had what everyone else thought was success, and what I thought was success, quite frankly. And I think in some ways it was for sure. That said, I got in a car accident, head-on collision, my fault, like I mentioned. Fortunately, no one was killed. That is the most fortunate part. But this was not a fender bender. This was a head-on collision, 30 miles an hour. Luckily, I was driving a 2004 Volkswagen Passat that I used to call a tank. German engineered steel trap of a car, totally saved my life. The other car was a lift-kitted pickup truck, so they were okay too. But at 26, I reflected on my entire life at that point. My dad died suddenly in a car at 28. So that was my turning point. That was when I went from external success and that sort of competitive nature that you're mentioning, Chelsea, to, okay, I got to figure out who I am, which is not actually antithesis to what you were saying, because it's like, if I don't go all in on who I am, because when my stepdad left at 14, I feel like I unconsciously had this sort of social world and real world. In the real world, I was super competitive, super driven, tons of tenacity, high IQ, not necessarily high EQ, which I've shifted, very, very structured, disciplined, boom, 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 competitive as hell. But then in the social world, I was this sort of social coward chameleon who fit in, fit in, fit in, don't lose any more friends and family because I dealt with so much loss growing up. I flipped the script and I basically went all in on fulfillment and internal growth, personal development, personal growth, self-improvement, started a company. What you'll never learn in school but desperately need to know was the name of our sort of our tagline. That was 11 years ago. I'm 36 now. I always joke, I'm hoping to hit puberty at 37. But my point is, I realized that I was basically playing in a finite game where I was trying to win and prove myself in a world where it's actually more of an infinite game. Now, this is my, I want to make it as clear as possible. I am competitive and I think you need a competitive drive and I think you need your edge and I think you need to have tenacity. You cannot be timid, especially not in business. That said, we now have 8 billion people on planet Earth. We have 5.65 billion people on the internet, and that is exponentially increasing with Starlink. We have an interconnected global world. 30 years ago, you couldn't start a company from a laptop. Now you absolutely can. And I have a 19-person team that we do not have a headquarters. We do not have a building. We do not go to any one space. Some of them I've never even met in person. So if you are not on the collaborative train, you might be in some trouble. Because you basically have five generations working simultaneously now from all over the world. And women tend to be more collaborative, more humble, I think more hardworking. That's my truth. And they tend to just wear a lot more hats. And a lot more women are in the workforce now, and they tend to be collaborative by nature. And I think the patriarchal, top-down, military-industrial complex type of stuff is in the past. So in the 21st century, I think it's the century for women, and I'm excited for that. It's about fucking time. Sorry if I'm not supposed to swear. Please edit that out. But that's the truth. And I do think if you don't have collaboration and high EQ, I think you're in trouble in leadership in the 21st century. Now, that said, you better have drive and you better have tenacity and you better not be a pushover. However, if you can harmonize and lead a diverse group of people from all different countries from all over the world, you become very powerful. Because I'm in Massachusetts in the US, and quite frankly, I hire a lot of people globally that I wouldn't hire in the US. And the reason why is because they are extremely, extremely, extremely expensive. And sometimes have a lot of entitlement. Now, if you're used to minimum wage being a certain level and you made that in high school, now I can get that globally for one-fifth the price. And these people are unbelievably hardworking and skilled. So I'm not anti-America by any means. I please do not put me on that train whatsoever.
We won't take you
However,
out of context.
yeah, thank you. Please don't. But I definitely think that there are some amazing talent pools globally where they grew up with very little and they will work 10 times harder for one tenth the money. And I think that that is unbelievable. And you can give them tremendous opportunities. And so you need to be an high EQ, multicultural, harmonizing leader who isn't just top down sort of dictator.
Okay, very good. I like your perspective. All right, so we're going to dig in. So now that we have our intro, there's three key questions. And so what we'll do is I'll ask the question and kind of start it off, and then we'll just go through the same order. After you're done, when you're done, just let me know so that if the other person has a rebuttal, we can just kind of go down that bunny trail. All right, so we're going to kick it off with why do you believe your approach, in this case with Chelsea, is competition, produces better long-term results? Like, why is it more effective in leadership?
I mean, honestly, I would say because competition forces clarity. It forces you to have to get clear on what are you doing, why are you there, and why is it important to you? You know, if we look at like an individual business owner, then if they're not out there competing with other businesses and they're just copying things, like they're not sharpening anything. And so they are trying to share a lane with other people who do similar things to them. And that process doesn't produce any good kind of results, let alone long-term business results. And so for them, like really being able to process like and build that internal stability that becomes this foundation of you. Because if you don't know why you're showing up at the end of the day and why you can outshine someone, and I'm not talking about metrics, I'm not talking about like sales numbers and things like that. Ultimately, you improve your sales numbers when you know why you're good at sales or what things about yourself. Alan talked a lot about like, you know, EQ. If you don't know that about yourself and you don't know where your signature, like emotional intelligence actually is, then what are we even really doing in a sales arena? What are we trying to do? Are we trying to sell things to people? Because as we shift into a feminine culture, people don't want to be sold. People don't want to be talked at. People don't want that kind of thing. So if you're out there still trying to be like, our brand is this and we sell this and like, let's tag team on this fluffy kind of, you know, innovative idea that still doesn't have an edge to it that is signature like you and yourself, then it's kind of just becoming this watered down space where you're not really getting an edge or ahead in the here and now. And if there's no here and now, you're gonna either struggle a lot along the way to get to that end, you know, long-term range of success, or you may end up somewhere completely different. And that's not why anyone goes into business. That's not why anyone starts doing anything. There is a lot of unlearning what is being surrounded, you know, what we're hearing and what we're taking in. And so sometimes when we start to kind of get into that space where we're collaborating with people, we're actually holding ourselves back. We're not showing up as ourselves and we're not letting ourselves like lead in the way that we want to lead, or we're not saying the thing that needs to be said because we don't want to hurt people's feelings, right? We're not a bunch of jerks sitting around being like, I'm better than you. That's not how anyone shows up to the table in business. And, you know, if they are, and I mean, I hope that works for them, but I doubt that will only get them so far. But it really just becomes a matter of if you want these long-term results, you've got to know your own lane. And if your own lane isn't defined, then you're just like driving backwards on the highway doing, you know, donuts, getting pulled over.
How does that relate to building like leadership as a team? So that is all true. I agree with you on the perspective from business ownership, but like what about the leadership taking it down to the team level and bossing it, right? Like how would you suggest a leader manage people from a competition perspective?
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, when Alan mentioned like leading a team and collaborating in that space, my first thought was, wow, I bet your team would get so much further and have so many more great ideas if you actually knew what each person's true strength was, not the strength of their skill sets that they bring to the table as far as, you know, I can do like data management, I can do sales, I can do acquisitions, like those kinds of things, but truly like what is like their actual identity and like who do they connect with and why do they connect with those people? Because if you have someone who leans in to ambition and optimism and they can see things that other people can't see, that's probably the person you want talking to the people who are unsure about your product versus the person who can, you know, do all the things and wants to be the person who holds people's hands. That's your customer service representative. It's not just because they're like, oh, I can do customer service. I can answer the phone. Like I can, you know, take people's grievances. But you really have to know what people's strengths are. Otherwise, you're just putting people in roles that they're like, I'll do that because they're too timid or maybe too afraid to challenge themselves to show up to do the next thing that they're actually always been equipped to be able to do. And so it's kind of like taking your star athletes and just like putting them on the second string because you never gave them a chance to get out there on the field. And so as a team leader, I would be looking at a whole different set of metrics when it comes to figuring out who is it that is in my arena, who am I working with, and like what is it that we're actually trying to do here. And just kind of flipping that perspective upside down, right? It's less about a job resume and more about like who you are at your core and why you're that way.
Okay, powerful. Do you have any challenges to that, Alan? Or you could
So,
jump into your perspective, whichever.
several, but respectfully, of course. The first thing I would share, and again, I don't want this to be Chelsea versus me necessarily. This is a good discussion, but I do know the core essence. I always hold this rock up, the essence of each team member. We do dreams, goals, priorities, metrics, habits, skills, and identity. And identity is at the core of everything we do. And I'm the CEO, and I coaching is my primary thing. And so I do know not only what the skill sets are of each team member, but I also know what their core identity is. And what I've found over time leading a team is that if it's too competitive, people don't feel psychologically safe to share who they really are. But if it's too collaborative, there's timidity and watered downness and that kind of thing. So again, I think we both realize this is obviously a harmonization of both competitive nature and collaboration. The other piece that I would share too is I think complementary skill sets are good, but core values need to be similar. So I have a X and Y axis quadrant on my whiteboard right over here. And I think every leader out there should have their own flavor of this, and I'll give you mine. The y-axis is coachability, which in parentheses I'd put humility, inward humility. A lot of people that are inwardly humble don't come off humble. Okay, so inward humility, meaning you're the one reading the books, you're the one doing the work, you're the one who's coachable, you're the one open to Chelsea's perspective and my perspective, because you want to learn the truth in the middle. The y-axis is work ethic. So what I figured out is the upper right quadrant, high coachability and high work ethic are my absolutely people. There are two types of people I cannot work with under any circumstance. Number one is bullies, people who put others down to feel bigger. And number two is what I call spoiled brats, people who want huge rewards for minimal effort. So as long as you're not one of those two people, which those are the people I'm competing against, by the way, not only in business, but in life, good luck if you don't have work ethic and coachability. So I bring the strategy in my coaching, the metacog, and they bring high coachability and high work ethic. So my absolute people have high coachability, high work ethic. My absolute not people have low coachability and low work ethic. But if you look at the quadrant, the danger zone is the other quadrants. Took me till my 30s to figure this out. The upper left quadrant is high coachability but low work ethic. Dangerous. Super open, but they never put in the work. Bottom right quadrant is high work ethic but low coachability, meaning they work really hard but at their own thing and they can't harmonize with the overall vision. They can't collaborate with others. So I had to learn the hard way, and for anyone who has a team that they've built from scratch, we had a 24-person team at one point. We only have 19 now, so you guys can crunch the numbers on some of the painful moments. And some of those people were with us for years, and we were going to go out of business because we hired the wrong people. So I think complementary skill sets are critical. You got to know who you are. You got to know your edge. You got to know your essence. I'm with you. And you have to have common core values on your team. Otherwise, you're competing with each other. And I've had this happen in the past. We had a couple team members where the women would feel and they'd compete with the other women, the men would compete with the other men, particularly the women, because we had a lot of women on our team. And there was one woman in particular who was very jealous of the other woman who was rising in the organization. And it created this sort of tension of competition that was actually very negative and toxic. And so I got the bad apple out of the barrel type of thing. And there was a couple actually. But now it's been a lot more. I think we're competitive with self, meaning you better try to get better every day at NLU. Like, if you don't have high work ethic and trying to get better every day, you are not going to fit here, and you kind of know it, and you're not even going to want to be here. However, when you compete with other people in the organization, it creates these silos, and you're not collaborating, and we have 16 departments, so the departments aren't learning from each other. And so I think, again, it's a balance, but I do think collaboration is the 21st century. It just is. We're all different cultures, all different backgrounds, all different industries, all different countries, the 195 countries on planet Earth. Right? And you're not starting a gym anymore where you only have your geographic radius for a market. And then the last piece of this, community. Community is the future. In the AI world, human connection, belonging, and community is where everything needs to be. Zappos isn't a shoe company. Zappos has a community globally of people that are raving fans. And you can't create community unless you're collaborative.
Interesting perspective. Okay, I can't wait to hear how you would implement that. All right, so let's first switch gears. Each position, just talk about the downside of your own position and, how would you address that? So Chelsea, we'll kick it off with you.
I think the most obvious one is that, competition can burn you out if you let it become ego-driven, or if you let it create like a pressure cooker loop, especially, in your subconscious and with the people surrounding you that are like doing things adjacent to you in life, let alone if you are like working in a team environment. And that can really keep you stuck, and it makes it really easy to start watching what everyone else is doing instead of just paying attention to your trajectory, which can create kind of what you were talking about, Alan, where people are competing, of similar things, even though their overall goal for the business is the same. And so, most people will tell you with some of that, like, oh, like set boundaries or say no, like put your blinders on or, just keep focusing on what you're working on. But that's really only specific advice for certain people in certain situations as they come up. For me, it's really more about making sure that you're not competing to prove that you're better, but you're competing to prove that you're different. Because when you anchor in like this true identity that you have, and I love that you know like the word that your people like identify with like at their core, I think that that is incredible. And I think that anyone listening, if you don't know that, please ask Alan how he implements that with his people because it is incredibly important. But when you know those kinds of things, competition doesn't become combative. It doesn't have to be. It can stop being competitive, but only if you know what people are doing with that word they identify with, right? Only if you know what happens when they use that as a gift to bless and create for others, because then it becomes outside of them, right? They take their identity and they actually like turn that inside out into the outside world, which allows you to stay away from those ego-driven places and things like that, because then you're not fighting people, you're just refining yourself all the time. And essentially, when you know those strengths and you leverage them, like that foundation that you have built gets to be the thing that overcomes the optics, right? Some people will look at competitiveness and be like, oh, like they're just too competitive, right? Solution to that is one, please don't be a jerk. Okay. You get to show your motivation, but you also get to explain why you're wired for that, why you're wired to do the thing that you're doing in the way that you're doing it. And you can let your results do the talking. It's less about being liked, more about being understood for who you are, but also undeniable, because when you tell people why you are that thing, like why you are who you are, they can't help but understand, right? They don't have to like it, but they understand, right? If I told you why I'm ambitious and you were like, oh, ambition's just a dirty word, right? Like, I get that a lot with the whole be your own black sheep thing. They're like, ooh, I don't know if I'm a black sheep. But if I were to describe to you what ambition means to me and how, like, I grow ambitious, like cultures of people who get to find a way to stand up for who they are and what they believe in a way that makes them feel seen and heard and understood. It changes how you view my level of ambition. All of a sudden, I'm not, you know, this like hungry person ready to climb a ladder. My level of ambition and how I like exude that shifts in your mind. But if we don't talk about it and it's just like, here's my traits and here's my values, then okay, I could still be a jerk covered up under, you know, the title of ambition if I want to be, which I don't. But so I think those are some of the biggest things. Like some of the biggest downsides are just being not seen for what you really mean and coming off as too competitive. And then just also feeling like sometimes you miss like certain perspectives, right? Some people will say, like, if you're not in tune with, you know, a group, you're not collaborating, you're missing something, like right? Iron sharpens iron and things like that. And I agree to an extent for sure. But I also think that means that you have to be really selective with mentorship. You have to be really selective on like where you're seeking advice while you're figuring out who you are, right? Don't dilute partnerships and, you know, groups and things like that that don't actually enhance everyone's strengths. So, you know, again, sometimes you have to like shift what a collaborative group looks like if you're in a team leader. Sometimes you may have to split groups into smaller groups or the opposite, right? And so I think that that's where there's really this lane for figuring out how you actually get to work with people. Because if we're not sitting there, you know, enhancing our own strengths, but also having compassion and understanding, then we're not really in it for the business model. We're just in it to make a paycheck at the end of the day. And whoever's running that business doesn't really love that idea either.
Awesome. I got some good notes from that. Thank you. All right, Alan, how about you? What are some of the downsides of your approach, and then how would you address them?
Yeah, the things that came up for me, I wanted to start with optimal stopping problem. So we all know the Goldilocks. I use nachos as an analogy. You put them in for 3.5 minutes and they're burnt. You put them in for 30 seconds, the cheese isn't melted, so the optimal stopping problem is 1.5 minutes. Too much competitiveness and you burn out, but also too little and you become everything for everyone and you water yourself down and also burn out. So it obviously the truth is in the middle, which is the point of this whole thing. So I just want to reiterate that over and over again. The downside of being overly collaborative, excuse me, happened to me. I am very naturally competitive by nature. As a kid, I loved getting good at things and competition drove me. Gaming, sports, snowboarding, the whole nine, and academics as well. And then I think I lost myself a little bit after 26. I overswung the pendulum back. So pre-26, pre-car accident, I was overly competitive and very tenacious and super achiever, definitely trying to prove myself, and I didn't know that. Obviously, that was unconscious, you know, stepdad left, all that kind of thing. But then I overswung. I became this sort of overly warm, loving, be liked by everybody person, and I was a wandering generality and not a meaningful specific. And there was a time in our team when we had a 24-person team where it was kind of like I was worried more about being liked as a leader than I was about being respected. And I'm a competitive person by nature. I think I'm very, like I said, tenacious, and drive comes naturally. I actually got a therapist in my 30s. Her name is Carol, and we worked through, and I sort of rewatched the movie of my own life and over and over and over again, but from a higher sense of awareness. And I realized that a lot of my drive comes from pain. There's something called an ACE score, adverse childhood experiences, and mine was not pretty. But what I will say is, drive is so natural for me that I thought I should work on the EQ piece. I should work on the warmth. It's strength and warmth. It's IQ, EQ. It's collaborative and competitive. But syntax matters. I'm naturally competitive as hell and always have been. So for me, I had to work on the collaboration piece. And what happened to me with 24 people on our team, there was a lot of. I allowed people in the organization, I won't name any names, to overly influence who we were, and we did dilute my essence. So I'll give you one tiny example. So we do something called a system of success, peak performance tracking. Every single client, every single team member that I've ever had has a system of success, clear, specific, reverse engineered dreams, goals, priorities, metrics, habits, skills, and identity. Okay? And in that, we do something called a performance review. We used to call it a performance review, and it would be most important win, most important improvement. We used to all have workbooks. Well, back in my overly collaborative days, sort of probably early 30s, we decided people don't like workbooks. They want guidebooks. People don't want performance reviews. They want an experience review. Chelsea, you're chuckling. We got soft. I'll be honest with you, we got soft. Not only physically, that I was in great shape, Kevin was too, and we just started getting soft, literally and physically and figuratively and metaphorically. We lost our edge. We lost our edge. And we were so afraid to be toxic masculine that we became feminine. We lost who we were. And this is the warrior part of me coming out now. This is the competitive drive that's deep inside of me that I basically know is too much for most people. So I think what it comes down to for anyone out there watching or listening, this is what I would share. If you are collaborative by nature, work on the competitive piece. If you are competitive by nature, work on the collaborative piece.
That's really
Two
powerful.
guesses, which I am, right?
I mean, the fact is that you're aware of it and you've worked on that piece, so it's really insightful. I appreciate your insights. That was really powerful too.
Thank you, Lindsay.
Okay, well let's get kind of a summary. I would like it to let's talk about you both have such an amazing experience. I think you're both such powerful individuals, and I'm truly grateful that like this worked out the way it did. Like I couldn't have divined this myself. This was fantastic. I would like to, we talked about implementing this, but since you both have such a unique, well-rounded experience on both sides, I'd like to maybe also just expand it and like let's just rip the format off a little bit, I suppose you could say. Just speak your truth. Like what advice do you have to leaders, to founders, to employees, and how can they grow and be better within themselves just based on your own experience? Does that make sense what I'm saying? All right. So Chelsea, let's hear it from you, my friend.
I would say it's really about knowing yourself in flow. Like you have to know what it is for you that makes you tick, and then defining your edge from there. And so it's really about less chasing to find your brand or to find that, sweet spot for yourself that cuts off the flow. If you're forcing things, it's probably not correct for who you are. And I'm not saying that you're not going to trial and error and figure that all out along the way. That's, part of your experience. That's part of what your chaos gets to be that leads you to this like clarity in the end. But your work should reflect you, not someone else's version or some product or outside offer. of what you think you're supposed to be doing. And so you have to know what that flow looks like for you specifically, for your team specifically. And if you run, even if you run a conglomeration, like you have to know what that is for like the actual like merit of why you guys are even in business in the first place. Because I can promise you it's not to sell shoes to somebody. It's not to help, you know, somebody lose 20 pounds. It's not to help, you know, sell a car at a car lot. That's not the actual point. Right? Yes, there's a paycheck and a take home at the end of the day that comes with all of that, but you have to know what it is for you or the thing that you're doing that is the actual essence of the business, not just what you're selling. And from there, that's where you define that edge. That's where you get to either like majorly audit what you're doing, you get to look at your offers, your content, whatever that is, and ask, like, what is the real reason someone would choose this and choose me over anyone else? And what is it that I can do at this incredibly high level in such a way that only I can do it in my way? And then from there, connect the dots. And again, it's not going to be this like beautiful, like streamlined process. You're not just going to take out a journal and a notebook and be like, okay, like let's put up all of our team qualities on the whiteboard and figure it out. There is a going to be a lot of back and forth and a lot of wiggle room and a lot of soul searching that happens, but you can't build it that kind of a house without the foundation. Otherwise, what, I mean, you're just gonna get mudslide right off the cliff.
Yeah, very transactional, and it versus, you know, I would say relational, but it starts with a relationship with yourself, is what I'm hearing you say. Yeah.
Yeah, really just identity driven. I mean, it has to come from within and not what you think or have been told that comes from within.
Okay, let's give people just one more deeper takeaway. So for those people who are overly collaborative, I mean, you both have shared really awesome experience, like stories about what that looks like in life. So there may be people listening to this who's like, yeah, that is me. And I really should be a little bit more competitive, but I'm really scared. I don't know how to just let go of this identity of needing to be liked or, you know, feeling like you got to fit the mold or the political correctness because there's so much weirdness around all of that. Like, what do you say to people who might be feeling that like curiosity about going deeper within themselves and embracing that? How do they, what's a one step they can take today to do that?
And I would say, truly, like if you're somebody who is collaborating and you're like, I need to be more competitive, then the thing is like you need to look at like where are you coming from in your collaboration? Is it coming from a place of power or is it coming from a place of need? And really starting to identify like what that is for you, because if it's coming from a place of need, ask yourself, like, are you okay with that? And if you are, then you're probably collaborating for the right reasons. But what is it about you that has power, right? What is it that somebody else in that collaboration who's there out of need is looking to gain from being in that experience with you? Because if you can answer that, you don't have to be this confident, shiny object at the end of the day. You get to be yourself. Some people are incredibly introverted. I'm actually one of them. Like some people are just super nice and gentle and like the most warm, loving humans who do not want to get on a podcast or stand on a stage or speak to anyone about anything that has to do with any kind of authority. And that is beautiful because that's who they are. But if they're doing it because they're hiding, then we've got to look at like, what is your power? It doesn't have to look like anyone else's, but if you can own that and you can find what makes that warm, nurturing, like gentle feeling true for you, and how that is a gift to the other people that you can connect with or that you're working with, then all of a sudden you're the only person in the room who can do that like you can do that. So you are the bright, shiny star of gentle, nurturing, warmth, quiet, calm, whatever that looks like. A lot of the times we think that competitiveness and like having this like high edge means that we've got to be like all in your face and go getter and like high energy 24/7. And it's not true. And so part of that is a societal stigma. Part of that is, things that we just let other people take the lead because they want to do that. So we just come and hang out over here. But you get to be the strongest version of exactly why you are who you are.
Oh,
Because nobody else can do that.
That was really powerful. My goodness. I'm glad I asked. Alan, what about you? What wisdom do you have to embrace or to share with us? I'm sure it's going to be fantastic. I can't wait.
Thank you, thank you. So this has been awesome. I really appreciate the both sides thing. I think that's really important for everyone to think for themselves. I think what's come out is I chat GPT'd this not long ago, and I just wanted to use it as a metaphor, so I hope no one takes this poorly. We all have to be careful nowadays. But ultimately, there's one species of canine, but there's 500 different breeds, recognized breeds of dogs globally. Well, there's one Homo sapien, human being. And there's 500 different breeds. Some of us are Great Danes, some of us are Dalmatians, some of us are Pomeranians, some of us are Chihuahuas. And I think that we both came to the same place, Chelsea, which is I think you have to figure out how you're wired and what breed you are. I am a structured super achiever. One of my exes said dating you is like dating a stairmaster. I never stop, and I never will. And I haven't taken a day off in 10 years, and some people will villainize me for that. I used to hide that, but to Chelsea's point, I don't hide anymore. That is who I am. And oh, you need to take a day. Listen, someone said this to me. Oh, Alan, that's so bad for you. I said, no, that's bad for you. This is who I am. As a matter of fact, I want to dial this up, not down. Now, I'm going to use this last piece. Kevin and we were too scared to own who we were. And so a lot of what Chelsea's been saying is going to come. I agree with her on a lot of it. Most of it, honestly. Kevin wanted to be respected and significant, and I wanted to be liked and loved. But there's pros and cons to everything. I am a hardwired, super achiever, drive, 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 tenacious as hell, will not take a day off, doesn't even want to. And I was trying to be liked and warm and loving and have everybody approve of me. That was not working. And I lost myself in that. Kev was trying to pretend to be a super achiever, driven all the time, doesn't need R&R. He's the most likable guy, warm, loving, high EQ. Everybody loves Kevin at a barbecue. I wanted to be liked at a barbecue, and I never was. He wanted to be liked in a boardroom and respected in a boardroom, and he never was. And eventually, over time in our 30s, we realized we were running from our true selves. And once you own who you are in your essence, you then can work on the skills of the other side. So if you are naturally competitive as hell, accept it and own it and don't run from it. But then you do have to work on being warm and loving and collaboration. If you are naturally warm and loving, the last thing you need is more warm and loving. You are not going to be successful if you don't build some tenacity and some competitive drive. But you have to own the warm and loving first. So I am IQ first, EQ second. I used to pretend to be otherwise. Kevin is EQ first, IQ second, and used to pretend to be otherwise. And when we became men and grew up from being boys, we realized that was not going to work because I was trying to be him unconsciously and he was trying to be me. And that isn't going to work because we are all wired a certain way. And it takes tremendous courage to own who you are socially. We all own who we are behind the scenes. Very few of us own who we are socially because we are all wired for belonging. And not taking a day off for 10 years is not going to make me belong. That's on the very high end of a statistical bell curve that makes everyone uncomfortable.
That's true. Basically, what I'm hearing you say, if we were to just kind of summarize everything, we're both saying embrace your differences. And when you do, when you have the power and the honor of embracing your own differences, you then can be more collaborative because you can embrace those differences in other people, which I think it really just comes down to, I think Alan, it was you that was talking about respect. When you can respect the truth of who you are, it's easier to respect the truth of others, therefore you naturally become more collaborative. So it's an interesting it's been an interesting dialogue. I'm really stoked. It was so cool. Let's wrap it up. Just tell the audience where they can connect with you and who is the right person to connect with you so that if they're listening, they're kind of like, I'm resonating, but can she help me or can he help me? Go for it, Chelsea.
So for me, you can find me on social media. My handle on Instagram is Be Your Own Black Sheep. Same thing, the website is beyourownblacksheep.com. Try to keep that real simple across the board. And I would say that somebody who should head my way is someone who has no idea how to even begin doing what we talked about today. figuring out what it is that makes them stand out, that makes them unique. Like they know, what they've been through in life. They know exactly who, they want to become. Like they know all of these like quirks about themselves. They know what they want and don't want, or maybe they're still discovering what that looks like for them a little bit. But truly, what I do is take everything that you could possibly want to word vomit at me, and I can reflect that back to you in such a way that you're like, that is literally everything I've ever stood for my entire life. Those are the things that have been these core themes throughout everything. And from there, teaching you how to build a business that reflects and revolves around those merits. So it
Yes.
isn't transactional. It isn't about something that you're sitting there trying to sell this product or this thing or this concept all day long, but rather you're actually connecting with humans over who you are and that being your gift rather than the thing that you're trying to convince them that they should want to buy from you.
Nice. I had already kind of talked about it, but I'm an engineer. Not just in practice, computer engineering in college, which was the hardest thing I've ever done, but also the most empowering thing. And I call it STEM biff, science, technology, engineering, mathematics, business, and finance. For me, that always came natural. Reading, writing, EQ never came naturally, and I needed to develop those skills to the point of this whole conversation. But if you are someone who has a big heart and wants to help others, and you have high coachability, meaning you're willing to listen to someone else who you think is smarter than you and who you admit might know more than you, we will reverse engineer your goals and dreams like you've never seen. And if you have high work ethic, I realized somewhere along my coaching journey for the last 11 years, I just can't help people who don't have work ethic. I just can't. And I'm just going to be a pain in your butt. Because if you don't have work ethic and coachability, I'm useless to you. But if you want to own who you are, to your point, Chelsea, and then actually reverse engineer your goals and dreams, I'm your guy for sure. If you have the humility to admit that someone else might know more about your path than you do.
And your website is nextleveluniverse.com.
Correct.
Okay.
And the best place to reach me is on Instagram. That is going to be me. It's not going to be AI. It's going to be actually me. I check it every day. You can DM me at alazarus88, alazaros88 on Instagram. I use Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn every single day. Those are my three. And if you reach out, it will actually be me. You can also email me, alan@nextleveluniverse.com. But quite frankly, and I want to be clear about this, if you don't have coachability and work ethic, do not reach out under any circumstance.
I love it. You know yourself. I'm great. No, I mean,
Yeah.
you know what? Like, just to our whole point, you know your edge, you know where you can make the biggest difference, and you're not interested in wasting your time or anyone else's. And I totally respect that. Excellent. Well, thank you. This has been honestly amazing. I'm just grateful for this conversation.